haven't. In terms of going to check, this is where we're focusing on our planning as the CETA to make sure that we respond to industry needs. Also, we're looking at growing, as the chair alluded to, growing infrastructure and rural development is our focus. We also want to prioritize our investment in terms of making sure that the enrolled learners actually end up getting employment or entrepreneurship. And then again, to make sure that our quality assurance processes are able to make sure that there's quality training that is being provided. In terms of our goal three, as I've alluded, Chair, in terms of strengthening the capabilities, we've identified that we wanted to make sure that we leverage on partnerships, we promote enterprise development, and also ensuring that we focus on promoting stakeholder participation. In terms of goal four, in terms of our own capabilities, I think we have the view that without sound financial management, without proper processes, we're not able to achieve what is our mandate. So here we are focusing on sound financial management, ensuring that we strengthen our human resources, which we think is the most important resource. This is attested to the fact that most of our staff members are now improving themselves, as alluded to by the chairperson, making sure that we have a working or functioning governance structures that are accountable, and of course, to conduct credible research that informs the things that we deliver as a CETA. Chair, in terms of our APP, it is broken down into four programs. Program one being that of administration, which largely focuses on sound financial management and making sure that we've got functioning governance structures. And then in terms of program two, it's where we plan research to inform what it is that we want to deliver as a CETA. Program three is really the program that is the core business of the CETA, where we are now delivering on our mandate, making sure that mainly the main issues there are to grow infrastructure and rural development, to promote supply and demand of partnerships, promote enterprise development, to improve skills development throughput, and to promote stakeholder participation. But of course, we say we can do all these programs, deliver all these programs, but if we don't have the adequate supply of skills development providers, we will not be able to achieve our mandate, and therefore, we are focusing on strengthening and ensuring that there's good quality in terms of that, and of course, improving the efficiency on certification, because whilst we can train, what people need are those certificates to be able to go and use for employment. Chair, I will not go through the budget as such, but the Chair has alluded that our budget is approximately 1.6 billion per CETA. Chair, in terms of our targets, just to go into them, in terms of rural development, what we want to achieve this year, and I'm not talking to all the targets in the APP, but the ones that we think are the priority targets or key targets of focus for us. In terms of rural development, we want to have three targeted projects that are focused specifically on rural development. We want to ensure that in this current financial year, we look into building about 12 more skills or infrastructure-related skills development centers, the artisan academies and all. In terms of priority partnerships, you will see, Chair, that it looks like the target is small, it is 5, but we are adding on to what we already have. So this year we are targeting to add 5 from the 15 that we already have in terms of TVET partnerships. We are adding 3 universities to the 11 that we've already achieved, and we want to add 150 more employers to the 649 that we've already achieved in terms of these partnerships where employers provide workplaces, we run joint projects with them. In terms of enterprise development, Chair, as our priority area, we are planning to support, in the prior period, we supported about 207 cooperatives throughout the country. We want to improve that to support a further 300. We want to support small and micro enterprises, about 300 of those. our support to NGOs, we want to grow it by 100, and also our support to our non-levy paying employers, about 90 that we are targeting. As the chair alluded to, we have been targeting the support to unions. In the current financial year, we are able to support 5, but we want to grow this to support 8 unions, including federations as well. In terms of our lending interventions, Chair, our numbers have exponentially grown over time. To date, when the board took over, we had about 2,000 learners in the system. To date, we have about 103,000 learners in the system. Of course, here, this is in line with our NSDF strategy, and we are planning to support overall in this coming financial year, 32,945 learners in those areas. In terms of quality assurance, of course, I think we must say here that the way we've been calculating our target has been focusing on looking at what complies in terms of applications that come to us. We're targeting to have completed 90% of those applications that comply. And we did achieve 100, but we are also targeting 90% again. But I think what we're missing, Chair, is the question of what happens to those that do not comply. Hence, we've introduced a target to make sure that those that do not comply, we also assist them as a tutor and remedy to make sure that they do get that certification. And as well as in the same breath with certification, we want to make sure that certificates are issued within 90 days of completion of the learning. Of course, we must also say that as far as certification is concerned, it's also largely dependent on our partners being our skills development providers. But we've taken a proactive stance as a sector to making sure that we introduce systems that will enable us to identify when learners have completed without necessarily waiting for those skills development providers to inform us that the learners have completed.
Can I ask you because the rest of
Chair, in terms of RPL, currently with the allocation of this current financial year, we are planning to, in fact, we have actually funded 600 learners in the current financial year, and this is valued at 27 million. The speaker also took a position, Chair, that, you know, with RPL, it's been one of those areas where everybody does their own thing, but there's never been a system that says how RPL should happen. And also, we found that we didn't have adequate facilities to deal with the question of RPL. So the CETA has then committed to funding a national RPL center. It will be based in Gauteng, and we have set aside 30 million into building that center. Of course, it is not only going to be limited to service CETA-related type of qualification. It is going to be based on all CETA-related qualifications. Chair, also in terms of enterprise development, as it has been alluded to, that this is one of the national imperatives. To date, in terms of this current financial year, we have funded 4,517 learners to the tune of 162 million in terms of new venture creation programs. And as I indicated earlier, we are planning to support 200 cooperatives to the value of 14 million. And also, Chair, what we found with enterprise development as well is that there isn't one central place where the value chain of enterprise development is provided. And therefore, the CETA took a decision to also establish a national entrepreneurship development institute. And the first phase of this is also estimated to be at about 500 million. Chair, in terms of the community quality, the chair has alluded to this, that the CETA is working with the Department of Higher Education, and we have committed funding of 256 million to building 4 community colleges, and these will be in those areas, one in Western Cape, Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, and the Bronx. because we are working with the department to identify this, that the idea behind this community college is that they must be built, or they should be built in areas where there are no TVET colleges or HET institutions in close proximity. So that's where we are building this community colleges. The minister's vision on this is that this should grow in future into being campuses or even fully fledged TVET colleges. So that is what we want to support, Chair. Chair, the next slide also just gives us an indication of how we have moved in relation to the national the NSDS 3. You'll see, Chair, that we've been gradually improving. We started off, when we look at from 2011 to 2012, we started off with 44,300 learners. We are now sitting with 92,000 learners. This is not taking into account the current financial year enrollment. Chair, this slide talks to, I think, the department alluded to the fact that there is an independent task team that evaluates our sector school plan and our planning. As a CETA, we have improved, we ranked 18 in terms of how we plan and how we constitute our APP. We've improved to 8. Of course, our aim is to be at the top, given that we are also the biggest CETA. And there have been improvements also that have been noted by the committee in relation to how we do our sector school plan, strategic plan, and plan. And we were recognized leading for in the area of strategic outcomes, outcome-oriented goals, and also having goals that are measurable. And in terms of organizational performance and risk monitoring and remediation strategy in terms of risks. Chair, I think in terms of risk, when the board took over, we had about 41 specific risks. These have now been reduced to about 3 specific risks. With that, Chair, I will end my presentation.
Thank you very much. I want to ask honourable members, shall we take questions now, or shall we? I want to take all 3 presentations and then we'll ask questions at the end. Silence is like consent.
I thought it was a good idea to see how the presentation you might find that discussion about this thing.
And that is opposed to that idea? I don't see any. Then I will hand over and ask that the Energy and Water CETA do their presentation. Over to the Chair. You can stay where you are.
We're a delegation here consisting of the CEO on my left, the Harold Gladwell, the COO, Nathalie Nelen Moleke, and the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Yetipo Mokapi. I will be brief, Chairperson, so that the CEO and the team can get into the details of our presentation. My focus will be purely to outline that the governance side of the CETA is functioning. We have a clear mandate based on the plan, and working with the Department of Higher Education. In order to ensure that there is good governance, we have to ensure that the system of accountability, insofar as the resources we're getting and delivery of our mandate happens. So our committees are effective, and we have to ensure that the committees are trained. We engage the services of IOD to ensure that all committee members have been trained. We also have to ensure that there is checks and balances in the form of internal audit and external audit, and audit committee members who are coming from qualified individuals who are mainly external. So then we ensure that there is checks and balances and monitoring on our side. We ensure that there is compliance insofar as regulation is concerned and the reporting. Chairperson, over and above what we have been given as targets, there are some interventions which we are executing in the form of war on leaks. It's a very huge program which tries to address the water leakage in various areas, in rural areas, in the township. So we are training artisans or individuals so that they can be able to prevent further water losses we're experiencing in the country. Not only that, another intervention is rural and township revitalization. As we know that many houses have been connected, if I'm not mistaken, up to 90%, over 90%, people have electrical equipment, be it iron, kettle, and all those things, and they get damaged. So we need artisans in rural areas, in the township, will be able to fix these equipment so that people can proceed, make use of them. Having said, Chairperson, I will pass on now to the CEO to take us through on the work which has been done so far. Thank you.
To the mic. Thank you very much, Chair. For us, we thank you so much for the opportunity, other honorable members, especially the Chairperson of the LGBT Global Government, and the committee. This presentation, after I've done some introductory remarks, will reflect on what informs the strategic planning process, tracking and monitoring. Just to say by way of introduction, I've been a long way since 2010 to this administration. And the most FOI of describing our journey is by way of the Greek word phoenix, the bird associated with the sun that obtains new life by arising from the ashes of its predecessor. We have, in terms of our administration, in 2010-11, they did put an administration infrastructure. We had serious challenges in terms of the leadership sector. At one stage, within 18 months, we had 4 FOCs. That was before the point in September of the year. But we have managed to grow the organization pretty steadily in terms of taking this much forward. We had a serious skills gap amongst our employees, and these, as you will see, by way of organizational restructuring, re-engineering, as well as performance management systems, we have managed to put certain tools in place for us to function much more responsive to our mandate in terms of us taking care of our sector. We had low revenue base, and this still continues, but we have upped our game a little bit, and limited funding. We are one of the smaller cities that are really below 300 million times in terms of income. Yet, we're supposed to service the energy and the water sector. And maybe just by way of information, when we say energy, EWC needs to respond to the energy needs, both in terms of electricity, oil and gas, nuclear, as well as renewables. And you know that even renewables has got six subsections from solar CSP and so on. From the water side, our work is to look at the water services, waste water, and sanitation as well. And so these are serious challenges within the country, and yet the revenue streams, the capacity was quite limited at the time. We had a number of stakeholder challenges during administration, and we, in terms of our restructuring of our organization, we then developed and approved by the board, put together a branch that will look at the sector itself in terms of collaboration and stakeholder engagement. And that branch has been doing the efforts that we see in our financial statements, that we have increased our revenue streams by way of the income that we have managed to secure. Our perception of non-performance is number one, as indicated by the department earlier. But we can report to you that under the leadership of our chairperson, the premier last year in March, and ourselves, we appointed the new CEO, our chief operations officer next to me, Mr. Emile Mouleta, and in December we appointed our chief financial officer. For 2 years I was off in work, but we have really turned the corner in terms of, as you can see, our performance figures right now speaks from 44% to 79% in the current year under review. But just by way of indicating that since administration, we have conducted a functionality assessment, a thorough organizational climate survey, and then obviously a revised structure that will be much more effective. Because our structure was sector-based at the time when we came in, and really in a CPAP space you need an organizational structure that is value chain-based, from street planning to quality assurance to street delivery. And that's exactly what we've done, and that's why we could see and register improvement throughout. We had our ICT, for instance, the engineer. You'll find that our labor market intelligence was almost non-existent. Our management information system was located elsewhere. Access control, and just the interface into and warehousing of information, and how it speaks to payroll and the other financial applications. Now, we conducted a policy review of rising about 81 policies to bring that in line with current legislation. Because in the absence of policy and legislation of change by the accounting authority, we managed to package our own policies informed by legislation in order for us to drive the governance and administration of the organization. We developed a sample operating procedure that assisting us in terms of everybody understanding what and who does it when. We have conducted legal due diligence in terms of our contracts, our current legal cases and so forth, and cleaned up all that, and we've implemented a performance management system. We can indicate that in the 2012-13 we have received unqualified audit opinions, 13-14 a qualification, and that was merely because the newly appointed CFO at the time went to reconstruct a commitment schedule that was already audited by the Auditor General. And when we alerted her to that, as well as engaging the AG on this matter, she was adamant and landed us in a qualification at the time, and she was requested us to release her from our position. But ever since, we have bounced back on a very, very strong trajectory of the unqualified opinion, and we are firmly of the view, if not this round, 17, 17, 17, we will be able to register it below. The now, in terms of our strategic plan, it really sits on these four pillars. First of all, the National Development Plan, that really, if you remember when the Planning Commission used to do their route at the time, they had two dedicated slides in terms of their presentations when they consulted communities and stakeholders, one on energy and one on water, because that was uppermost in the planning. And so if you look at the NDP, coupled with an 9-point plan of government, we try to respond as best as we can. And you will read in our last year's annual report how we have responded by way of indicating to the public and to Parliament how we have responded to the different SONA imperatives that affect our sector. And so we continue on that trajectory and continue to report in that regard. The framework within which the CITA must develop the strategies and plans is that of the National Skill Development Strategy 3, document that is issued by the National Human Resource Council, developed by the Deputy President, and that informs in terms of its goals what our work should do. You will know better than me as parliamentarian that the medium-term strategic framework of government is really informed by the party in government manifesto that crafts its medium-term strategic framework in terms of that manifesto. And I think for the first time in the history of the country, we came up with 12 outcomes informed by the MTSF, and our outcome sits in outcome number 12 for a skilled workforce growth economy. And then lastly, the EW CIPA and all other CIPAs do their market research very, very thoroughly by way of mathematical models, extrapolation, forecasting, and so forth, to that recommend what the skill gap will be over the 5 years to come and up to the 10 years. And that informs our planning so that we plan around making sure we close the gap of demand and supply when it comes to this. Just to say that the drivers at this point within our space, from a strategic point of view, is our shift towards renewable energy sources. The green agenda of government in terms of the green court, your nuclear build program, Operation Pakistan, strategic infrastructure projects in terms of the national infrastructure plan, as well as sustainable resource development. Our challenge though is when it comes to the strategic infrastructure plan project, that we are one CETA that are sitting with almost six of those steps that we need to respond to, given our resources, given our size and so forth. And at some point I requested our chairperson of the board to engage the minister regarding this issue. Now, our status skills plan, SSP, and strategic plan process are as follows, and I'm not going to go through that, but these are the basic information. But the flow is that the SSP submitted to the DA informs our board strategic planning session, and then therefore our strategic plan and our annual performance plan. We have, some CITAs have got 8 programs, others have 6. We've got 4 strategic outcome-oriented goals that we then translate into 4 programs. The first one is to ensure that the organization and its machinery is effective and efficient in terms of its capabilities. And therefore, our goal number one is effective and efficient development of the sector. Goal number two is improve sector skills planning. And I've touched on it just earlier in terms of how we do the SSP. Goal number three is enhance skills for the workers, unemployed, and the informal sector. And then goal number four, build skills development provision capacity. And that we've translated now into 4 programs. Program 1, administration. Program 2, skills planning. Program 3, learning programs and projects. And then program 4, quality assurance. I'm going to request at this point a chairperson that my colleague this side, the CEO, just take us through the strategic objectives. And after that, within 3 slides, the CFO will come in to speak to the incoming commission.
Thanks, CEO, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. In terms of Goal 1, as articulated, we have 5 strategic objectives under that particular program, which, by the way, is to ensure that the health of the organization is maintained, and also to ensure that we harmonize and increase on service delivery. The strategic objectives under that goal. One is to coordinate development and monitoring of the actual strategic plan, because we're expected by law to ensure that we submit strategic plan, annual performance plan, and report on the progress that is registered on those particular plans in terms of annual reports and so forth. Number two, promotion of good corporate governance practices and management. I think the board chairperson has already alluded in terms of the plan on how they re-engineer the committees that support the machinery of corporate governance. Number three is to attract and develop right people in the right position. I think the CEO has indicated that for the past 2-3 financial years, he was the CEO, COO, and the CFO. Hence, there were some performance challenges that were registered. But I think that by having this particular strategic objective and also making sure that we report on achievement of such, will ensure that we stabilize the organization and move it forward. And then number four is optimal utilization of ICT to enable that as an authority we can claim space in ensuring that we are recognized and leader in the energy and water sector to make sure that we deliver on the mandate. Number five is market and promote the work of authority to stakeholders to ensure that internal and external clients can be communicated to. The CEO indicated that the challenge with our organization, I'm sure earlier you saw the budget of our services, and compared to us, it's not even a quarter, but we're expected to meet almost the same targets as the bigger CETAs. So that's where the issues of management come strongly to ensure that we maximize the minimal budgets that we are having. Strategic objective number two, or goal two, is to improve sector discipline. Under that, we've got the three strategic objectives. One, to ensure that we catalyze production of masters and doctoral graduates in the energy and water sector, because from where we are sitting with the pillars that the CEO indicated, there's new forms of energy that are identified as strategic towards development of energy in the country. However, we are left behind in terms of the skills that needs to support those innovations. So it's our responsibility to ensure that we fund masters and doctoral students, and also to ensure that we can meet those demands. Two, conduct research for planning of skills development in the energy and water sector. I think the department indicated earlier the processes, and I do not want to dwell much on that one. Three, to increase workplace learning through mandatory grants. The CEO's office now, that is what the CEO and the CFO and the COO, is responsible to on a stakeholder drive to ensure that we mobilize stakeholders from the employers who you find that they are paying levies in other instances but not submitting the USPs and ETRs, which bring a skewed research reports that informs our own planning. So we have put that as a focus point to make sure that we harmonize and make sure that we rev the traction of many employers in the energy and water sector to ensure that we participate in the skills development processes. And then the pillar number three, goal number three, the strategic objective thereof is about workplace learning through discretionary grants, implementation of special projects with strong partners to drive strategic sector goals, to ensure implementation of all projects and 10 years completion. Because I think the challenge that we are going to see in all sectors is that we are very big in learners entering the learning programs, but we have a challenge of output when it comes to completion. So we want to make sure that we, through monitoring and evaluation, that we monitor that closely to ensure that at least impact studies can be done and be attested to. And then lastly, to increase awareness of energy and water occupations, particularly around young persons. And then the last strategic objective is about to build skills development, position, capacity. we have about four strategic objectives there. One, to increase numbers of accredited service providers. Two, to increase the number of application systems for making of occupational qualifications. Three, to increase efficacy in the discharge of quality assurance functions. Four, to develop qualifications that are informed by the demand is mandated by the National Skills Development Strategy. And over to the CEO.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. I will just high level just highlight our income and expenditure trends. And the reason the slide is highlighted is to indicate our operational limits. We are driven by the revenue that we receive. Like highlighted below, we are just below the 300 million levy income that we receive, and our performance is actually dictated by these. If you look in the last, from 2013, we've got a trend, a slightly increasing trend that is due to labor force increase in the market and the salary growth. But there has been some intervention in the last year and in the current year to increase our levy by identifying, as CEO has indicated, levy payers who should be actually paying levy to us and those who are paying who are not active. There's been a very small increase. If you look in our projections for the 17, 18, and 19 to 20, there's a robust increase that is indicated there, and this is due to our stakeholder engagement office. In our next slide, it just indicates our type of expenditure. If you look back in the previous 3 years, also our administration expenditure was also quite high, because after administration, there was a lot of consultants that we used. There was a lot of need for correcting the administration within the office. If you look in our APP, there is still some targets that one might argue that these are operational targets, but these are also all in interventions to correct what is in the procedure, the administration of the procedure. We continue also to pay our mandatory grants and to also identify and assist those employers who are not qualifying. And this is also through our stakeholder engagement on educating our employers on how to submit and what to submit so that we distribute these funds back to the energy grant to the employers. I will not go into the details of our budget. It's provided in the next slide. And the COO will just now continue and get into the details of our targets.
Yeah, so granting me the small spin to just catch my breath. I just want to conclude by saying that for us, as articulated by the National Skills Authority, monitoring evaluation is also a very, very key issue. And so for us, what we have been driving very robustly at this point is staff performance agreements aligned to plan, monthly reporting internally, as well as a strong emphasis on variances. Our quarterly report to the board, the Department of Education, National Treasury, quarterly performance appraisals, risk management framework, and assessment, as well as internal audit. But I just want to raise this matter in conclusion. Okay, by the way, I wanted to put a photo here of the truck that we have designed, called the truck, the energy truck. And we've been exhibiting that truck at the Africa Energy in Durban. We have exhibited that truck at the Africa Utility Week. For the first time, we participated in the Africa Utility Week this year. At Africa Energy in Durban, we got the second prize in the whole of Africa for the best innovative exhibition. But we were not happy with that, so we went and entered into the Africa Utility Week. And we were given with all international companies as well as industry from Africa, and so forth. We were nominated as the best performer in terms of the most innovative exhibition ever in the utility with global Africa. Now when you go to the African Utility Week, the one thing that we try to do is to engage industry members. Our challenge in this country is really And it's something that our minister's been articulating, leading with. Our deputy minister has been driving this articulation of industry coming on board and driving the whole notion with us as government, the issue of skill development. If you go to Germany today, the Germans are on top of their game because they are driving, not government, commerce and industry are driving, initiating skills development, and they fund it as well. I think South Africa is one of the, much as our model is a very, very impressive model, as a feedback from a number of colleagues that we engage the international space. We are one of the only governments who really paid industry to do training with us. Our problem is we can do at the level of teachers, universities, TVET colleges, we can do theoretical training. But unless industry and commerce one day decides, big business in this country, that they're really taking the black child and the South African child serious when it comes to developing them, training them, and skilling them, we will forever have a very, very serious challenge. Because that for us, industry says, when we train at the TVET college level, university and engineers and so on, they say, no, the quality of the training is, but they're not on board. They don't give the youngster that exposure to get the practical experience of training at the level of the shop floor. And so, I'm not sure where I should put this, but I know my minister is driving it, my deputy minister is, but I really want to raise it here at this level as well. That until we get industry, commerce, and big business in this country to assist us with our training programs and how we roll out, we will definitely continue to struggle. But just with those few words, Chair,
I think.
Okay.
Chairperson, basically this is our story, but more important is that to do all these things requires that we have a good relationship with our stakeholders. So there are many of those stakeholders, including labor, who are one of those sectors which is highly organized. We have to navigate and manage those relationships. We are also playing a role in the current fees crisis at universities, especially the missing middle. As we speak this year, we have supported about 580. We thank you for listening to us. The past will inherit, the future will build.
Thank you very much to the Energy and Water speaker. Before I ask the next speaker to do the presentation, honourable members, may we welcome the Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Training, honourable Manana. Welcome. Can we now, honourable members, go to
Thank you.